Good morning and welcome to this edition of the Real Rundown Podcast. This is episode 19.
19?
19. Can you believe it? We have almost hit double digits. I am Epic Film Guy, Nick.
I am Epic Film Guy, Justin.
Justin. The lisp is back this week, thankfully. I was really hoping we would get to hear that again.
It'll come back periodically.
And again, it is Friday, November 6th, 2015, on this edition of The Rundown. We got a lot to talk about tonight. And, and the end. So this is Epic Film Guy. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about. But Justin, why don't you first tell me what you're drinking tonight?
Tonight, I am drinking the Stone, actually, 20th Anniversary Encore Series. It's the Stone Vertical Epic. I will repeat that again, the Epic Ale. It is 8.9% alcohol by volume. It's a pretty standard ale. I like it. It tastes like Stone. Really enjoyed it. It's good.
Well, I am drinking, and I, Jared had challenged us as part of the Never Seen It November challenge, which we're going to talk about tonight. He had challenged us to drink 10 beers we've never tried before as part of that challenge as well. And in that spirit, my buddy Bill was down here over the weekend, and he bought a six-pack of beer. He left a few of them here, none of which I've ever tried before. So I am drinking Brooklyn's half ale. It's a Session Saison. It tastes kind of like a Saison had a baby with a hoppy pale ale or an IPA. So it's, I don't know.
I really don't know
how to describe it. No, it's not.
How do you not know?
It doesn't hit it out of the park on either aspect. Like the hops aren't really at the level I would expect. And the, you know, it doesn't have the crisp and the like the refreshing aspect of a Saison. It's just neither one of them is really there for me, and it just kind of tastes like a hoppy pale ale, but not a good one. So
it's mediocre. All right.
Yeah, it is mediocre. It's I haven't checked it into Untappd yet from the brand new Epic Film Guys Studios 3-5. That's where brand I new? Am now. That's what it is. That's what it is. So we are live from a brand new location this week. Again, last week's final episode at the original Epic Film Guy Studios was a little bittersweet, but I'm looking forward to recording a lot of great podcasts in this location.
Wait a minute. Do you actually consider what we do great? Come on.
I do consider what we do great. I do. I consider it to be amazing.
I'm sitting here in my underwear, man.
So am I. And isn't that amazing that we can just sit here in our underwear and bullshit?
I guess, yeah. You're right. It is.
If you were here, amazing. You would have taken off your pants by now anyway. So let's be fucking honest about it.
Hey, maybe when I come up for Christmas time and we do our Star Wars The Force Awakens review, we can both be just sitting in our underwear.
All right, we could do that, but they have to be Star Wars themed underwear. That's the
I already have a pair of those.
So. Okay, I'm gonna make mine Kylo Ren / Luke Skywalker undies. It's gonna have Kylo Ren on the front and Luke Skywalker on the back.
Yeah, but on the back it has to say Kylo Ren is Luke Skywalker, or vice versa. We got another one of those on the page today. On the
I saw that
on the Kylo Ren poster. And
I think Luke, he was joking though. I don't think he was serious about that. I think that was just a joke.
I would hope so, but hey, you never know.
Yeah, I don't think it was serious. Like I said, I think it was just a joke. And we're going to start here with some listener questions, posted questions on our Twitter and on our Facebook for people to ask us questions, things they want included in the podcast, even if they're fucking trolling. Dan, thank you. One of our main listeners, Mr. Dan Brennick, asked, why is Blue Moon, the beer, God's finest gift to our beautiful planet Earth? And
wrong.
Follow up, why are these bullshit microbreweries destroying such treasures as Bud Light Platinum? And follow up to the follow up, when did Zeus create the majesty known as pumpkin beer, and why has it single-handedly saved the beer industry? I have one answer to all three of those questions, Dan. Fuck you. That is, I guess, that's the best answer that I can come up with for that. First of all, Blue Moon, as far as like a whip beer or whip style goes, not even close to the best. If you're going to do like a macro brewed whip beer, I think Hoegaarden is immensely superior to Blue Moon, first of all. But there are a lot of micro brewed whip beers that are fantastic, and as soon as I get a chance to see you, I will have to have you taste some of those. And Justin, I know you're a big Bud Light Platinum fan, so I'll let you talk about that. Oh, all right. See, the Bud Light Platinum, it was so delicious it put you to sleep, made you take a little nap.
Come on now. Don't insult my intelligence here. However, I will openly admit that back in the Dizay, Blue Moon was one of the first wheat-styled beers that I'd ever had. It probably was a gateway beer for me. I have to openly admit it. I'm not ashamed to say it. It was probably the first beer that I tasted that it was probably first, and then it was Magic, one of the Magic Cat beers that I had second, that I'm like, wow, this actually has flavor. Yeah, Magic Cat
was a big one for me as well. Number 9 Pale Ale.
Yeah, that was it. That was probably the first, yep. You know, actual. But the wheat beer, like, it gave me a flavor of something that I'm like, oh, this isn't just like piss water. Because prior to that, just so any of you fans out there listening will know this now, I used to hate beer. I was a whiskey guy for many, many, many years until it got me into so much trouble. I lost all of my friends, all of my money, and everything that I had. No, for real, though.
I'm not even his friend. I just do this. I just do this for the
charity. No
answer coming in a future episode.
I do still appreciate a good old fashioned once in a great while, but no, I mean, I really was a whiskey guy over the years when I was playing in many metal bands, but Blue Moon was the gateway beer, then, you know, Magic Hat and whatever. So I'll openly admit it. Now, if I drink a Blue Moon, I mean, I swear to God, like, I'll spit it out immediately. Yes.
Yeah, beer, you wonder snob. What's missing from it.
Beer snob. Whatever. I don't care. I will admit. I don't, as you notice, I don't have a problem admitting who I am.
So is it, and Dan, and last year when my buddy Bill got married, Dan was one of the groomsmen. And at that time, Dan was drinking gin and tonic. That was the drink of choice for Dan all throughout that entire weekend, and he's transitioned into beer now. And I'm wondering, I'm hoping anyway, that this is kind of the same scenario that you just mentioned there, just a gateway. Hopefully he'll branch out into a little bit more delicious, delicious beer, but we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. We had you also trolling us on Facebook, saying that you wanted to do a full podcast entirely about Marvel and only about Marvel.
It wasn't me.
I'm pretty sure that was you. Of course. If I remember correctly.
Of course it was not. I would never want to talk about Marve. I won't even finish it.
Yeah. I do think it's going to be a good idea to probably take a look back at the Marvel Cinematic Universe when Phase 3 actually begins with Civil War next year. And when does that come out? May 2016, I believe.
It does.
We're supposed to get a trailer
with Star Wars
soon. No, it's before that.
Shows how up to date I am on Marvel
news. I have heard it's before that. But, I mean, you don't pay attention to this Marvel news. And I do, because, you know, I love Marvel so, so much. More than anyone could ever love Marvel ever. So, yeah. deal with it. And our other listener, Jason McCannon, he actually had some real questions here. And he said, it's obvious from Episode 7's trailer that the Ewok victory party at the end of Jedi was premature and a waste of time. It seems clear that they should have been crushing the final remnants of the Empire and seeking pockets of resistance and preparing for a galactic insurgency. So his question is, why did they assume it was over? And Jason, it's my understanding from both doing some reading online and from listening to some other podcasts that have talked about the Star Wars trailer, that the comics that they've been putting out that are canon, not old stuff or anything, but the comics that they've been putting out in the lead up to Episode 7 have addressed that very fact, that there have been, you know, pockets, you know, different Imperial admirals, commanders, or whomever that have said, you know, this is whatever. You know, there have been those different moments where they've addressed that in those comics. And I've also learned some spoilers about Episode 7, which I'm not happy about. But I won't share those because I don't want to ruin anyone else's good time.
Yeah, come on. I have not read any spoilers at all. I don't want to know anything about it. I didn't
mean to, but if you listen to some, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts like Drunken Dork. I've listened to Nerd Rage Podcast. I've been listening to a lot of these guys. They talk about a lot of the supplemental stuff in the canon that they've been reading that goes along with the podcasts, and they talk about events that have been confirmed in the comics that lead up to Episode 7. But that's where I'm going to leave it, because like I said, I don't want to ruin anyone's good time.
It's all right. You will leave that there while I will segue comfortably into our quiet sponsor, Matt Parks, from Jerky Gold Marinade. He had just actually tweeted on the old Twitter his video link for,
as opposed to tweeting on the old, I don't know.
I am not a Twitter user, so blah. But he actually just got, as you would call it, Carrie Fisher liked his tweet. This is going to be an Epic Film Guys exclusive. It's called Waiting for Episode 1. The trailer for it is up on our Facebook page right now. Waiting for Episode 1, it's called A New Drunk. And this is, I will not say names, but someone's father who went out and harassed a bunch of Star Wars fans waiting outside of the AMC, it was known as Lowe's Theater at the time, in Vestal, New York, while they were waiting and camping out for tickets, or to go see Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Back 16 years ago, back in 1999.
I was in high school. Yes, sir. But the trailer's on our page, and I wanted to mention this because I thought it was pretty awesome that Carrie Fisher actually liked his tweet. So
we'll go ahead and we'll throw a link to that in our show notes here. Over on Podbean, we'll throw a direct link to that video so people can check that out.
Make sure you watch the trailer. The full video will be, again, an Epic Film Guys exclusive only on the Epic Film Guys page. The first page that we'll be releasing outside of the YouTube channel that we'll be on. We'll make sure to keep you guys updated for one that will hit. It'll be hilarious, drunk, and fun. Again, that's Waiting for Episode 1, A New Drunk.
Do we know exactly when the full video is actually going to post? Has Matt let you know? Or
I'm hearing rumors that it will be before The Force Awakens. That's all I've heard. This is a rumor into itself. It's just like all these Star Wars rumors you're talking about that you're spoiling for yourself. But this one, you know, doesn't really spoil
it. Listen, I'm not spoiling anything for myself. I just stumble upon them.
That's the same thing. That. Hey, you used to yell at me and complain that I always spoiled every movie. And look, I don't even know anything about The Force Awakens other than Kylo Ren is Luke Skywalker and John Boyega's wielding a lightsaber. That's about it. That's all I know.
I will say, I'm going to say it publicly right now for you to understand it. I don't want to know anything about The Force Awakens when it releases, because what text message did I get from you either yesterday or today about the new James Bond movie that opens this weekend?
That had nothing to do with the actual film itself, other than the fact that it's not doing well critically.
It does. It absolutely does, because that was yesterday at noon, actually. I just looked it up. You said the reviews for Spectre aren't good, and that creates an expectation. So I don't even want to know where it's tracking.
If I recall,
Rotten Tomatoes wise, I don't even want to know that much.
If I recall, I never said that it wasn't. I said it's not doing that well.
You said the reviews were not good.
I never said that.
Yes, I can fucking text. I screenshot and send you the text message.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's putting words in my mouth to not believe anything this man says, even though I'm very excited I got my tickets tonight to see Spectre for tomorrow night at Alamo Drafthouse. I honestly could care less what the reviews say. I love Skyfall. I love Casino Royale. And Quantum of Solace, serviceable. Whatever. But I'm excited to see another Mendez Craig Bond film in the theater. It's going to be a great time. So I'm really excited about that.
Hang on here. Where is it? Justin Sherwoodsy.
Esquivel. That's
not even your name anymore, but I still have it in here as that, and I don't care. There we go. There it goes. And here it comes. Here comes the screenshot.
Are you familiar with Red Letter Media? Do we know them?
I'm familiar with them, but I'm not an avid follower or anything.
Wow, 80,000 followers on Facebook, and these guys, they like to drink beer. They're both fat. They're both awkward looking. Wow. Maybe.
So is this just like a bunch of me's that talk about stuff?
They look like they might fit right in. 80,000.
I'm not awkward, though.
Whoa. Time for my next beer. That was just too much to handle. I'm going to go play with my new NECA Heath Ledger Joker figure I got tonight and touch his privates.
Well, I want to thank everybody that did submit questions for this week's podcast. Remember, you can always submit questions to us via Twitter, on our Facebook, or you can just email us at epicfilmguysny@gmail.com. We'll be happy to answer any questions you have, as well as look at any topics that you might be interested in. And I don't think we have a whole lot of new movie news to talk about this week, except for I want to get into a rant a little bit later here about Hugh Jackman supposedly turning up for reshoots for X-Men Apocalypse. I know, and believe me, I'm going to get into it. But before we get into that, I did want to mention our Never Seen It November challenge. So far, I think is going very, very well. And as promised, we're going to do shout outs for everybody that is currently taking part in the Never Seen It November Challenge. We're very, very happy for everybody that is taking part, and we encourage more people, please, come along. You only have to watch 10 movies that you've never seen before. So even if you start two-thirds of the way through the month, you can start on November 20th, watch a film a day, and still get it in by the end of the month. It's not a challenge in so much as that you win anything. What you win is the experience of exploring new films that you haven't seen before, something that you've always wanted to see, that you've always made excuses why, oh God, I can't watch it, or I couldn't watch it, I didn't have a chance to watch it, blah, 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 whatever the excuse may or may not be. You know, that's one of the reasons why I really liked the idea of this challenge, because there's a bunch of movies that I've really wanted to see.
I've constantly
kicked to the back burner.
Yeah, I decided I want to do this challenge, which I actually usually do. It's not even a challenge, but I usually do this on a monthly basis. A lot of what I do is I sit down and I have a list on my phone of films that I've thought about, or I see other people post about on Facebook or Instagram, or other social media sites or whatever. I'm just looking through lists of movies and I'm like, that sounds interesting, or I've never actually watched that all the way through, or whatever. Again, Never Seen It November is a great opportunity to even revisit films you've maybe even seen like a portion of as a kid, or something that you don't recall. Like, it's a great time, like, to sit down and just watch movies. It could be new, old, whatever the hell. Things that you don't really care that much about. It's all about enjoyment.
No, and that's why I went through it with my recommendations, and I recommended one film per decade. And when I made my list, I was very cognizant of that fact. I wanted to go through and I wanted to pick a bunch of older movies that I hadn't seen and some new releases in there. I've got Spectre and Hunger Games are both on my list of movies to see for the month. Obviously, those are both going to be brand new releases. And then for tonight, for example, I watched 12 Angry Men, which I've never seen before. The original with, you know, Henry Fonda and Lee J. Cobb. The original Willie Loman on Broadway. So I love, love, love Cobb's work. Fantastic. I can't, the masterpiece doesn't even begin to describe it. It's brilliant the way that the film was shot, all in the same room, you know, with the same actors, and the way that the camera just continually makes it feel more and more claustrophobic. These actors are just continually more and more drenched with sweat. You can just tell how much more uncomfortable and how much more tense the situation's getting with every passing second. It's unbelievable how good the movie is. And it's one of those movies that I've always wanted to see, and I'm really glad that I took the time this evening to actually sit down and watch it. I was blown away by it. Blown away. It was such a good movie.
Very happy to hear it. I actually started the challenge with a film that I was invited to see it at Alamo Drafthouse as part of the Secret Society of Film Masons over the summer. It is the Noel Marshall directed, and he's one of the leading actors, film, 1981 film, Roar. I'm not sure if you've heard of this film, Haskins, but
I have not.
You should have heard of it because it's one of the only films in film history where it's based upon a story that revolves around wild tigers, lions, and cheetahs, where there's literally 35 to 40 wild, or I should say slightly tamed, lions, tigers, and cheetahs on the set with the actors. 95% of the people involved in the film, including the main actress, Tippi Hedren, who was married to Noel Marshall at the time, and Tippi Hedren's young daughter at the time, Melanie Griffith, all of them were injured. Some of the people, the cinematographer, fatally injured, because they really wanted to show a film that had to do with these wild cats where it was natural. And it's listed as more of an adventure thriller. A lot of people list it as a horror film, but this movie is all real cat action. Sounds like I'm talking about a porno. Kind of is. I mean, literally from the first scene in the movie, you're seeing regular people getting mauled by giant cats. It's just a lesson to learn that you don't want to hang out with a bunch of lions inside of a closed house. It's just the way it is. But I started with that because it's a cult film for many, many reasons. There's a lot of social commentary that is driven into that film and why we should not be treating animals a certain way, so on and so forth. I did enjoy it. Very well shot. The story, don't expect much out of it. It's just really the experience of seeing these real actors and the director and people getting mauled and real blood and everything.
And just interacting with the real cats, right?
Right, exactly. The story is very, very simple, but it's a great experience, I would say, as far as any cinephile. I mean, it's a movie you have to watch because it's of its time. It took 4 years to shoot. There's many, many books about it, but it's the kind of film we don't see in this day and age.
Well, when did that come out?
1981. It took four years to film it all, considering the cinematographer was actually critically injured, and he actually recovered and went back and finished the film. And I guess they were shooting the film from little cages they built, so that way the cats wouldn't bother them, but the cats still got to them, and it's pretty crazy, man. It's pretty brutal. So I commend everyone involved with that film, and it is worth a view, for sure. I think you would even enjoy it, as corny as the movie is, just to see the experience. And Tippi Hedren, known as, you know, she's a Hitchcock girl. I mean, Marnie and, of course, the birds, but she's great in it. So I enjoyed it.
Well, and you also watched another film for the challenge already. You're already, what, two films in or three?
I believe I'm three, if I have to think about it. I did watch last night because yesterday was Charles Bronson's birthday. He would have been 94 years old. Any one of you guys out there that know me know that Charles Bronson is my all-time favorite action star, one of my favorite actors. So I watched a film of his that I'd never seen. It's a 1980 film called Borderline, and it has to do with him being Border Patrol near Mexico. And
there's actually a Bronson film that you haven't seen before?
There's quite a few, actually, because
That's shocking.
I can't even believe that. Well, it has to do with the fact that a lot of them are hard to come by. I own probably about 90% of the films that he stars in. Actually, he's a star, not like just a supporting actor, but the film's hard to come by. And what's awesome about that film, and it's a cool fact that I brought up in my Canon Films Appreciation Society page, is that the poster art for that film was actually done by Drew Struzan. So Drew Struzan did a poster with artwork featuring Charles Bronson. It's beautiful artwork. I did post that on the page, and I thought that was pretty awesome being a Bronson fan. So I watched that. It's a decent to mediocre film. It wasn't anything great, but I love Bronson, so I watch anything with that guy in it.
No, that'll do it. All right, and I did want to get our other shout-outs in here as well for everybody
else
taking part in the challenge. And keep in mind that if you join the challenge later on, we will give you a shout-out in the podcast, if that's the kind of thing you care about. I love it, honestly. I absolutely do. So we got Tom Groh. He checked in and said he's watching The World's End. That was his first film as part of the challenge. Jason McCann checked in, said he's watching The Man in the White Suit as his first flick. And Bill McLaughlin III, he listed his entire list of films. I'm guessing he watched the first one on the list, which was The Great White Silence, which I believe was 1927. I'm thinking that's the one that he watched first. My list, I posted the entire list earlier on our Facebook page, but my list was in no particular order. And somebody that I'm getting, you know, pretty involved with, I'm absolutely loving their podcast. It's the Countdown Podcast. And his name is Paul, and he watched Lost After Dark, which, Justin, I know is a film that you said that you were also disappointed with.
Oh, man. And yeah. As a lover of early 80s, actually all 80s slasher films, I think the filmmakers had the right idea. I won't take a lot of time on this, believe me, because I actually discussed this with the filmmakers. Yeah, exactly. But the film did put me to sleep, dude, and I love 80s slashers. They had the right idea. I just think that they maybe aren't mature enough filmmakers to make that kind of film yet. If you look at
it, just lacked an execution, or
exactly. I mean, if you look at like Adam Green with his first Hatchet film, like he was at the right time in his career. Now a lot of people hate Adam Green. Whatever, I don't care why you hate him, but he made the Hatchet trilogy, and I think it's a great throwback to old slashers. It's fun, it's corny, it's somewhat badly acted, whatever, but it feels like an 80s slasher in modern times. That movie was trying to be so much of a throwback, and now there's great throwbacks that have come out in the past couple years. The Guest, It Follows, among others, Drive, but it just didn't have anything. There's no redeeming qualities about it. The characters were all annoying. There's always like at least one character in a slasher you kind of like or you can relate to a little bit. Nothing there. And the kills weren't even that great. It was too slow. Not even a B minus. So, Paul, I agree with you, man. That as a slasher fan, that was a huge disappointment. It could have been so much better, too. Even with the cast involved, the way it was shot in the budget, it could have been a great time, but it wasn't.
And if you are a fan of our podcast, I do encourage you to also check out the Countdown Podcast. You can find them on iTunes, on Stitcher, and everything like that. Paul and Wayne, they do countdowns every week. They have a segment they call The Unbelievables. Used to be called The Unfuckables, where they basically challenged each other to watch a movie that they can't believe that the other hasn't seen, which is a great segment. I love that segment. Even though Paul hates Star Wars Episode 3, and it's really hilarious to hear Wayne kind of tear into him about it because he hates it so much. But they have a fantastic podcast, and we're very, very excited to maybe do a crossover with them in the future. And in that vein, their next episode is actually going to be the best and worst of 1991.
Oh, boy. I'm excited about this. We get to talk about movies from 1991, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I don't want to do a whole countdown thing because that's their thing. I just want to mention probably a couple films that we love from the year and maybe a film or two that we hate.
So go. So do it.
Just to kind of get in that. Well, I my favorite film from the year, I kind of looked through a bunch of lists because I had to remind myself what came out that year.
It's hard to go back that far. I was in first grade.
There's a bunch of films that I haven't. Yeah, there's a bunch of films that I haven't seen from 1991, to be 100% honest. But I mean, of the films that I have seen, Terminator 2 is one that immediately stands out to me and is probably absolutely my favorite. It is for all the films that Cameron has put out since, for, you know, Titanic, Avatar, you know, Cameron never really got it as perfect as he did with Terminator 2. It builds its tension perfectly. It takes Linda Hamilton's Sarah Connor character from the first film, who was this meek, you know, very weak, you know, she was a waitress, you know, she was very scared, she was afraid. And through that, through the original film back in 84, she grew stronger and stronger to become, in Terminator 2, this really, really strong, incredible character. And that's no, you can't take away from Linda Hamilton's performance, of course, in that film, but you also have the incredible script that Cameron wrote. Schwarzenegger's great in it. It's got Robert Patrick, who you talked about earlier. He, of course, plays the liquid metal T-1000. You know, Ed Furlong playing, you know, the savior of mankind, John Connor, and everything. It's just one of those movies that you can still watch it 25 years later, and it still holds up today. It's still such a perfect,
one of my favorite perfect films of action all time.
Movie. Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great movie. And, you know, another great release from that year, Silence of the Lambs, which you yelled at me for not watching during the horror challenge when I chose to watch The Nurse or whatever the hell that movie was instead.
Which I still think you're a complete and utter moron for choosing, but whatever.
But I also know there's a couple other films that came out that year that I know you're going to be more excited to talk about than I am. Cough, Swayze, cough.
I love Point Break. I will not deny it. Outside of Terminator 2, which...
And I don't even dislike Point Break. I just don't like Swayze, but I don't even dislike Point Break. It's a pretty fun kind of flick. It really is.
If you're complaining about wooden actors, we know who the lead is. So he's one of the most wooden actors of all time. But hey,
he makes Swayze look like a fucking Oscar winner.
I love them both in it. I love the entire plot of the movie. It's so of its time. It's so perfect for its time. So that's in 1991. And again, I will repeat this. Terminator 2, yes, we know. Everyone agrees. It is one of the best films ever made. One of the best action movies ever made. Absolutely, and it's one of my personal favorites. I mean,
not even contestable as far as
it's kind of hard to meet someone that doesn't agree. So I'll leave that out. That's like an entire podcast, two podcasts into itself. We had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 film that came out that year, the sequel, and it was pretty serviceable at the time. I have great fond memories of seeing that as a kid.
Beauty and the Beast that year.
Beauty and the Beast is one of my favorite Disney movies, actually. This
was before they had a separate category for animated film, was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, and it's great. I love the songs.
That's how good that movie is. And it is a very, very good movie. And I don't even dig on animated flicks, and it's that good. It really is.
It's good. And, oh man, there's actually, 91's not a bad year, I would say.
No.
There's
and I'm excited to hear what Paul and Wayne come up with in their countdown for what they loved and what they hated from that year.
When you go into comic book related films, this film is very near and dear to my heart, and it is still, in my opinion, it is still in my top 10 comic book, or I should say pulp character related films.
Director of another comic book movie as well.
But that is correct. Joe Johnston's The Rocketeer in his early days of directing. I love that film. I actually adore that film. It's one of my favorites. I watch it. It's a comfort flick for me. I love it so much. I could talk about it forever, but I will leave that to another time because there's a couple others I want to talk about as far as that year. There's a lot of good movies that came out that year, but I'm not going to talk about anything more that I liked except for, well, Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs came out that year, which is great too. But a year, 1991, one of my biggest disappointments, which I only realized later in life in my, I would say, 20s until my adulthood, is Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. That is one of the biggest disappointments. So I wouldn't say I hate the film, but it is, in my opinion, the weakest Nightmare on Elm Street film that has ever been put on the silver screen. Yes, it has a Johnny Depp cameo. Yes, Roseanne Barr starred in it. Yes, it has a few funny scenes with the power glove and whatever, but it is the weakest.
Everything you're describing sounds fucking terrible to me.
But hey, I know you're not a Nightmare fan. But the point being is there's zero atmosphere in that movie. It's not scary at all. We all love, you know, Freddy's comedy. We love Robert Englund as Freddy.
Do we?
As comedic. If you're a normal human being, yeah.
I guess I'm a Freddy fan. I'm not a Robert Englund fan. I'll say that.
Well, when I'm saying that, it's within the context of saying Englund is Freddy.
Well, yeah, that's incontestable. Yeah, that absolutely.
Because outside of that, my favorite role Robert Englund ever played was a goon that got beat up by Charles Bronson in the action film St. Ives from the late 70s. So, if that tells you anything. But I did want to mention real
quick. He was in that Oscar-winning, it should have been Oscar-winning, that Oscar-caliber performance in the absolute amazing Zombies versus Strippers. Still, just, I mean, top three films of all time should be. It's not. It's sorely overlooked for how genius it really is. But, you know, that's, I mean, I could just go on for a whole podcast about that.
Other honorable mentions, though. The Fisher King came out, one of Robin Williams' best films in 1991. Boys in the Hood, a classic film. You can't touch that. My Girl.
Cuba Gooding Jr., Ice Cube, yep.
I love that movie as a kid. And there was one more I wanted to mention. God, why can I not remember it?
Was it JFK? Oliver Stone's JFK?
I think that film's good, but it was another film that it was Bugsy. It was Bugsy, Warren Beatty. Yeah, I love that film. That's the one. So that's the last one.
But I'll at any rate, I don't want to steal too much of Paul and Wayne's thunder because, I mean, again, that's their bag.
Well, hey, so bring Paul and Wayne on here. I'm ready for a debate
We're working on a crossover. We're gonna keep working on that. Hopefully, we can get something together by the end of the year. But again, check out their full episode coming, I believe, sometime next week on the best and the worst. They'll be counting down the best and the worst of 1991 and. Last episode, Paul challenged Wayne to an unbelievable. Wayne has never seen Whiplash. So Wayne's going to be doing a review of Whiplash in the next episode. I'm really excited to hear that because I know you and I both absolutely loved that film.
Fantastic film. Yeah,
fantastic film. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Yeah. Oh, what do you want? Let me guess. You're going to take a piss, ain't you? Gonna piss, keep talking. What do you want me to talk about? Justin sends me messages over Skype, which is what we still sadly use to do these things, and tells me that I have to fill airtime while he goes to go to the bathroom. So I guess that's as good a time as any for me to break into this edition of Nick's Rants.
Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
And Hugh, I don't know whose idea this was, and I hope it's just a rumor, and I hope there's no weight to it. I hope there's no truth to it. But nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to see you cameo in Apocalypse. Now, I will be the first person to say that I've been an ardent defender of Hugh Jackman's interpretation of Wolverine from the get-go. I love Hugh Jackman. I very, very actively campaigned for him to win Best Actor for Les Miserables when he was starred in that. And I love him as Wolverine. I even loved him all the way through Days of Future Past. He was great as the vehicle by which the story was told. He didn't really have a big role in it except for just being the vehicle. You know, he's fantastic. But the X-Men franchise, and if they are ever, and I mean ever, going to prove that they can be successful and make any fucking money whatsoever, they need to prove that they can stand without Jackman being in every fucking film. You do not need Hugh Jackman in this film. I really, really hope that this is just a rumor, that there's absolutely no truth to it, that it's not anything. I don't even care. I don't want to see him anymore. I want to see him in Old Man Logan when that comes out in, I think, 2017. And that's it. That's it. He doesn't need, this franchise doesn't need him anymore, and he doesn't need it. So he, even if it's even a simple cameo like he had in First Class where he's in it for 5 seconds, I don't want to see him in this movie. I want these X films, especially because they're introducing this whole new cast. of, you know, Cyclops, Jean Grey, etc. in Apocalypse, I want to see these characters stand on their own. We kind of got Logan rebooting the continuity and handing it off. You know, the future's not set, to go back to Terminator 2. The future's not set now. And based on what we had seen before, everything got rebooted. Everything got restarted. So we don't fucking need to see Hugh Jackman in this film anymore. He just gets tossed and Mystique has him at the end of Days of Future Past. His fate is ambiguous. It's up in the air. Who knows? It doesn't matter. We don't need to see him. So that's my rant for today. And I'm really, really fucking hoping that it's not true. And maybe this was just somebody that just wanted to rile up the fan base by saying, oh, they sent Hugh Jackman up for a cameo, because it's just like Paul Feig with Ghostbusters. They just had to shoehorn this person into the script somehow, anyway they fucking could.
Well, on that subject, I agree with you. I have actually zero interest in seeing Hugh Jackman in this film.
Oh,
for me, I think like it was the breaking point when First Class came out. I wasn't expecting much. I was in the theater watching. It was like 2 weeks after it opened. And I was like, this movie's really good. I was really, really surprised at how amazing the movie was, how well it was going, how much I loved, at the time Fassbender was still unknown to me, how much I loved his Magneto, how much I loved McAvoy's Professor X.
And to be fair, in First Class, McAvoy and Fassbender both had huge, immense shoes to fill from Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Because they are both
incredible character actors, and they did the roles of Professor X and Magneto such justice. I mean, if there's anything about the original X trilogy that no one would ever, ever think to change, it's those two actors in those roles. No one would ever complain about that.
But point being that I was making before you cut in there, but was hey, that
I'll cut in whatever I want.
Was that I really actually liked the film a lot, and when Jackman shows up in that small cameo, it immediately takes me out of the film. He has no place. He has no place being in the film at all. Now, Days of Future Past, he worked in it. I got it. It worked out well. I liked it. I didn't mind it.
I like him as the vehicle in the film to tell the story. I really do.
But for me, at that point, that was literally for me like the last end. Like, okay, he's been in every single other X-Men film in some capacity. It's time for a film to be without Wolverine. He's not necessary to the story, in my opinion. I would much rather prefer not seeing him in the film. I read the news, but didn't take it very seriously. But at the same time, now that you're ranting about it, I don't want to see him. He's not necessary to this movie at all.
Both you and I know, and I'm going to say probably 75-25, we both know the chances of him having a cameo in this film versus not are much, much better. He's most likely going to show up, even if only for one very brief scene. You know he's probably going to be in it. Hugh Jackman has essentially become the Stan Lee of the X-Men franchise, where he's just popping up in literally every single film, even if it doesn't have anything to do with it.
I know. For me, it's like, let him have his last hurrah, but I was actually just looking more forward to the
We've got old third man Logan file. That comes in 2017, yeah. But we don't need him before that.
Honestly,
we absolutely don't.
I won't even lie, flat out admitting it. We don't even need an old man Logan. We don't even need an additional Wolverine thing. We've seen Wolverine in how many movies, dude? Seriously. Wolverine was my favorite character in the X-Men as a kid, in the original
Lenny's
cartoon.
I mean, I'm not beholden to the comics, and you know that. I'm not a comics reader, so I don't know anything about any of that. But would I like to see him just in one more film as Wolverine, like in a starring role in a sequel to The Wolverine, which I thought was pretty good up until that ridiculous final act?
I agree with you.
You know, I would like to see that. I would, but I don't. The X franchise, it needs to move on without him. I mean, isn't that the point of bringing in Tatum as Gambit? Like, he's supposed to be the one who's going to take the torch or whatever. I don't even know, but whatever, like this franchise has to learn how to live and breathe without Jackman pumping cash into it I don't even know if it's Jackman that brings box office to these films anymore. I don't necessarily think that Days of Future Past did more box office just because Jackman was in it.
It has nothing to do with Jackman.
I think it was an incredibly clever script that brought everything together. And
you just saw what happened to Pan. So no, Jackman has, I would have to say, very little to do with box office right now. If he had a lot to do with box office, Pan wouldn't have completely bombed, like miserably bombed, like it did last month. Moving on. I mean, for real.
I didn't want to see that fucking piece of trash anyway. It's the first time I ever saw a trailer. I was like, that looks like fucking garbage. And sure enough, speaking of garbage, I got to go see that Mockingjay sequel later this month. And after the first one, I'm not looking forward to it at all. I'm just hoping that it's a fitting conclusion to the saga.
I'm optimistic, at least that this part will. I'll still take it, and I'll wait till it comes out on Blu-ray, and I would love to just be able to cut the first half and the second half together, watch it as all one cohesive film. I will not lie to you. I watched the trailer for part two in the theater twice, and it did absolutely
I still don't even think I've ever seen a trailer.
Dude, they're not hyping it very much. Like, I don't see it much on social media outside of the fact that it's coming out this month.
Well, I honestly don't think they have to. I don't really think they have to.
Not saying they do, but the point being is you would think they at least would put a little effort into it. The posters are up at the theaters. I see that. But the trailer itself, I've seen it once in the theater. You know how often I go to the movies. Now, granted, I've been slacking lately, but you would assume you'd see that trailer a lot, like with everything, and I haven't. So I'm kind of surprised.
I don't know. I've got to go see that sometime by the end of the month. As I said, that's part of my November list. Did you make a list for your Never Seen It November Challenge, or are you just kind of flying on the seat of your pants and just grabbing a film you haven't seen whenever you're going to do another day?
Well, you mentioned grabbing. I'll tell you what I'm grabbing right now.
Well,
a nice cold.
No, I'm betting it's warm and it's a lot smaller than a beer bottle.
It's called the Ghost White IPA, White India Pale Ale.
I bet it's Ghost White.
Yeah, well,
if nothing else.
I'm just kind of deciding randomly.
Well, I did choose a list, and I wanted to choose stuff from. I wanted to choose a couple things. Number one, there's a bunch of older films that I haven't had a chance to see that I really want to check out. There's some films that I've owned the DVDs for forever that are still unopened.
That's horrible.
That I've just never watched. I know.
That's so horrible.
You know how it goes. You go to the Walmart. You go to the Walmart and you just dig through that $5 bin and you find a couple movies that, hey, this is a director that I really know and I'd like to check it out. Or this movie I heard was really good. Let me pick this up. It's only $5. And then, you know, you get busy and you forget about it. And then it just sits there for 6, 7, 8 years. You know, and that's what happened. I've got Following. That's Nolan's first film on there. Have you ever seen that?
I have not, actually.
Yeah, I haven't ever watched it either. I'll let you know.
That's
how
his
it is.
first ever. That's before
first, that predates Memento. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen it.
No. Yeah. No, I've got to check that out. I've got to check Pi. That's Darren Aronofsky's first ever film that predates Requiem for a Dream. And even though he had that big, big misstep with Noah, I still love him. He's still one of my favorite directors. Speaking of favorite directors, going old school, Fritz Lang, who, of course, made the brilliant, brilliant Metropolis, one of the best films of all time.
Agreed.
You know, I'm going to watch Fritz Lang's M, which is a German noir, just absolute classic. As I said, I checked out 12 Angry Men, and a film that I'm surprised I haven't watched yet, A Streetcar Named Desire with Marlon Brando, the one that was made back in 51 or 52.
That's actually, you know what? I might actually add that to my list, because that's been on a list to watch for a long time, so I'm probably going to watch that.
I will tell you that I love, the play by Tennessee Williams is genius. I absolutely love it. It's a brilliant, brilliant play about, you know, Blanche's descent into madness and everything like that. It's fantastic. So I've always wanted to see it. It's just one of those films that I was like, you know, I got to take the chance to check it out. So I'm going to do it. And I've heard that, you know, that was really one of Brando's breakout roles. You know, that was back in his sex symbol days, back in the early 50s, you know, when Brando was like just fucking Brando, you know? And Lucas's first film, American Graffiti, never seen that.
Oh, love it. I actually just watched it all the way through as an adult for the first time in May of this year. So don't feel bad about it.
Lucas, but it's a great film. I actually have to point out, we are only... five, 6 weeks away from The Force Awakens here, and I still have three more Star Wars movies to review for Star Wars Battlefront Forum.
Don't feel bad. I still have a full thing of the prequels I have to do.
I'm going
to
do it. I have to get it done. I'm going to get it done. I promise Luke it's going to happen. I will get it finished. American Graffiti, The Thin Red Line, and I posted this to the Facebook page earlier, but I'm not a Terrence Malick fan. I thought Tree of Life was the biggest piece of shit ever.
I know you did, but I fucking hated that movie. What else have you seen of his work, though?
I'd have to look at his filmography, which I don't feel like pulling up right now. I bet you that there's a bunch. I know that there's other films. Now I'm going to pull it up because you said that. But The Thin Red Line is another one of those films that... Hang on. Terrence Malick... Oh, I think I spelled it wrong.
You did, because I did too.
There it is. Yep. Okay. All right. But yeah, that's another one of those films that the Thin Red Line. Like I heard of it. I heard it was really, really good. So I picked it up. And I just have never actually sat down and watched it. So let's see. What have we got? Get out of here. What is going on with this thing? Let's see. Shit. As for films he's directed, fuck. You know what? Maybe I haven't seen anything that he's done.
You probably should.
I haven't, but I know I hated Tree of Life. I know I thought Tree of Life was fucking garbage. So I'm not expecting too much out of Thin Red Line, but I do love war films, especially World War II films. And the cast in Thin Red Line is unbelievable. It's such an all-star cast. So looking forward to that. From the guys over at the Countdown podcast last week, they did a countdown of the best book to film adaptations. And one of the films that Paul put high on his list was High Fidelity with John Cusack.
I actually just watched that movie a couple weeks ago.
Yep. So I'm going to check that movie out. And then again, as I said, Spectre, I'm probably going to check out this weekend.
You better, because we need a good written review on the damn page. Get to work.
I'll fucking start doing written reviews when you start getting some fucking video reviews.
I just explained this. That's what I was just saying to you. You
lazy fucker.
I'm going to do my epic film guys prequels rant view. It's not going to be really a review. It's going to be more of like what I love and what I don't love about the prequels.
Going to be 20 minutes of you with a stuffed Jar Jar doll telling it to go fuck itself and then punching it in the face.
I am not an avid hater of Jar Jar to the extent of others. I loved how today, you know, I posted the new Force Awakens posters on the page. Within like 15 minutes, someone photoshops the Han Solo one with Jar Jar Binks, you know, behind it. And
you know what my favorite piece of the Force Awakens marketing has been so far?
No, I don't.
That final poster that was released, the copy of that somebody released where they photoshopped every character's face up for Jar Jar.
Yeah.
It's so fucking hilarious. I died laughing when I saw that poster. I'd love to have a full-size print of that hanging in my fucking house. It's fucking amazing. And listen, somebody tweeted it. I forget who it was. It was like a month or so ago. But somebody tweeted it, like, the final scene of The Force Awakens is going to be Kylo Ren removing the mask and the big floppy gunkin ears come falling out. And then Jar Jar goes, Misa gonna avenge you, Annie. And then it cuts to black. I'd watch the shit out of that movie. I don't even fucking care.
I'm sure you would. I, on the other hand, I'm just really excited to get into Star Wars mode even more so.
Man, yeah, oh, yeah.
I still have yet to watch episode 2 out of the Blu-ray box set and episode 3. I'm hoping that my daughter will want to watch them with me. Then I'll be able to do my video. And then next month I will do my full original trilogy.
We got to get these done. The Star Wars mania, the Star Wars train is only picking up steam.
I'm excited. I'm very excited, but hey.
So give us any taste of what else you're going to be watching for Never Seen It November. You're going to keep that under wraps for now.
Right now, there's a handful of things I'm thinking about, but it's kind of coming as it's coming. Inside Out's on my list because I didn't get to catch that for the summer season.
I want to check that movie out, too. It won't be part of the challenge, but I think I'm going to check that movie out this month or hopefully early next month at the latest.
I'm taking any suggestions here. You just gave me one, but I do like being a little more spontaneous. My horror challenge is usually very structured to an extent, but like today I started watching a Frank Sinatra film I had never seen before, just like a feel good musical. And I like doing that kind of thing where I just kind of stumble upon things and watch it. And that way, cause I don't like the pressure. I don't want it to be work, you know?
Right. And that's one of the biggest things that I think is a plus of Never Seen It November versus the Horror Challenge. Cause the Horror Challenge, 31 films is a daunting task,
but you do know though,
you know, and that's what I wanted to do for Never Seen It November. I wanted it to be a rewarding experience for everybody that takes part. Just, it's the reward of exploring a new film yourself, you know, 10 films that you haven't seen before. That's why we want people to take part. And we, again, I'm sorry to keep ranting here, Justin, but we will give you a shout out in the podcast and we will keep posting on the page. Keep letting us know your progress. We want to know what you're watching and we want to know how you felt about it. It's great to hear people just checking out new film, just getting into stuff. Like there's a lot of, there's, and Justin can tell you this because he's probably seen a lot more movies than I have. There's a lot of just dark areas in my film, I don't know, film pantheon or whatever word you want to use, that I've there's a big chunk that I've just never seen, you know, and it's sad, but there's just a lot of years where I just haven't had the ability or the access, you know?
Understandably so. It happens. But as long as we make our way to see these movies, that's all that matters. We love movies. We never have ever stated in any one of our reviews or any of the social content we do on the social media that we're experts. I get this all the time. A guy at work's like, well, you're the expert on film. No, never said that. I just love movies. I know a little bit.
Maybe not. Maybe we're not the expert, but we're not the layperson either, because you and I do not watch films the way that the general audience does, and you know it.
I do know it, but I don't like to toot my own horn. One thing I did want to mention, because I am the only one that ever mentions this, but we are hitting the 1 hour mark here in a few minutes here. I did want to bring this up because I had a fantastic time in the past couple weeks with the Horror Challenge, and I did have an opportunity to meet one of the most iconic film directors of all time.
Ah, yes.
At the Exorcist Steps commemoration event in Washington, D.C., in Georgetown, right next to the college, William Friedkin, the director of The Exorcist and the director of The French Connection. Little did I know that the director of the novel, the actual novel that the film was based on, and the screenplay, William Peter Blatty, was there as well, signing autographs. I did not get to meet him. When I showed up, it was extremely packed. Above the stairs, I was hanging out downstairs thinking, hey, this is really dead. No one's here. Oh, did you go upstairs? Some guy mutters to me, and then I'm like, no. And I go up there, and there's like a huge line. Had some great talks with some great film fans and saw the DC Film Commission, you know, honor this place, and they unveiled the plaque, and it was a fantastic time. William Friedkin thanked me for my time being there, got his autograph, and this guy's, you know, 80 years old, and he's directed an Academy Award-winning film. And what was awesome about that time being spent there is that William Peter Blatty won an Academy Award, as did William Friedkin, and they both mentioned in their speeches how Academy Awards are like assholes. Everyone's got one, and they don't mean a damn thing, because there are some films out there that won Academy Awards that are absolutely useless to culture and film in general. And I thought it was fantastic. A huge, you know, event for film lovers. Thought it was great.
One of the biggest things that I wanted to do for Never Seen in November was one film that I want to check out, but I never, ever have. I want to go back and I want to watch How Green Was My Valley. That was a 1941 film that won Best Picture over Citizen Kane. One of those films that gets largely forgotten and dropped by the wayside, you know, because of course Citizen Kane in recent years, the past 20, 30 years, has all of a sudden become it tops everybody's list, or at least comes close to topping everybody's list of the best films of all time. And I still want to go check that film out. I've never seen that film. And I'd really, really love to see that film just to see. I don't know. I'm sure it's a good film. I'm sure it's not bad by any means. But, you know, it's just one of those films that I've just never checked out. And speaking of The Exorcist, I was also listening to the Lowbrow podcast, I believe, where they were ranking their favorite Halloween movies. And one of them also chose The Exorcist as their favorite horror movie of all time. So
it is one of the best.
There's that.
There is one of the best. And leaving on that note, I did need to mention this because I did watch it and I loved the shit out of it so much. Ash versus Evil Dead.
Gotham.
No. I cut you out completely, stab a very sharp object in your throat, and listen to you gargle blood until you pass away. Loved it. Man, Ash versus Evil Dead, been waiting years. Now, I am one of those that actually really, really loved and enjoyed the Evil Dead reboot / remake a lot. I get a lot of shit for that, but I think it was a great time. But Ash vs. Evil Dead is like a fanboy's wet dream. I thought it was great, and I'm very excited for next week's episode. Really, really excited about it. I thought it was a perfect mixture of Army of Darkness humor with the awesome goriness and demonic possession loving crap that we love from Evil Dead 2 and the first Evil Dead film. So any of you fans out there that have been second guessing watching it, no, that 98% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, it means something. If you're a fan, be sure to watch it. It was a great time. Bruce Campbell is absolutely perfect back in the role of Ash. Make sure to watch.
Yeah, I was going to say this does see the return of Bruce Campbell to the Ash role. And, so there's always that.
The key thing is here, and I'm weary about it, but I'm understanding Sam Raimi only directed the first episode of the season. Rightly so. That happens a lot with bigger directors that are producing a show. And it was great, man. Oh, man. I can't. It was blew my wad, for real. It was fantastic, fun time.
I suppose if we wanted to drag the podcast way past an hour, we could talk about the news where Raimi said he wanted to direct another Spider-Man flick for the MCU, but I guess we can leave that for another day before we mention the, you know, before we start on anything Marvel related for the podcast.
Please leave anything to do with Marvel alone, especially the fact that Tom Holland got that early 90s freaking part down the middle long haircut that I used to have when I was in fifth grade to be the new Ultimate Spider-Man. I honestly...
Hey, maybe he's going to bring it back. You're probably going to start fucking wearing your hair like that too, along with your fucking ridiculously unkempt beard. You look like a fucking hobo.
Dude, I comb that beard every day and I put beard oil in it and
it's just the way that, I don't know, maybe it's just the way that it's growing out from your face. It just gets bushier and bushier every time I see a photo of you.
It's because
so you just look more and more homeless. Just admit it. The wife kicked you out like a month ago. She just lets you come back in the apartment once a week to record the podcast.
Maybe you need to look up in the dictionary and just look up the word dapper and you'll see my face there.
Dapper my fucking ass. Oh, God.
Maybe all right. You need to get out of that little town there and see some culture, my good friend. Eckhart. You need to think about the future and see the future.
Talk about getting killed with fucking gargling in your throat, getting shot from the rafters.
Well, especially when you're morbidly obese and you're about to have a fucking heart attack anyway.
It sounds like he's choking on a fucking box of Krispy Kreme. but that is it for this week's episode of The Real Rundown Film Fans. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Epic Film Guys and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Epic Film Guys. And you can find us again on iTunes. Just add our feed URL to whatever subscription service you use. I use Podcast Addict. You can use Stitcher, iTunes, anything out there. You can find us. It's just epicfilmguys.podbean.com/feed. And we do appreciate all the support, all the shout outs that we've been getting from other podcasts. We're definitely looking forward to doing some crossovers and having some other discussions with other podcasts in the future. So, I mean, that's basically it. We definitely appreciate everybody that's been listening and all the new listeners that are coming in. thank you very much for supporting us, and we're only going to keep growing from here.
I'm growing right now in my pants.
Jack. Jack's dead, my friend.
You can call me Joker. And as you can see, I'm a lot happier.
And starts playing that ridiculous like circus music. Dun 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 dun. I am Epic Film Guy Nick.
I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
Thank you again for listening, everyone, and we'll see you at the movies.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Damn it, I'll fucking hit you. Like you hit that rat, make him squee.
I don't hit nothing that make nothing squee.
You do. I remember being at your apartment over on Old Pine Street or whatever it was.
Squee, squee.
Yep, I remember. And old Ratty went, squee, squee.